Halt! Who goes there? Oh, I'm sorry. I do apologize for my bad manners. Welcome to the castle of the noble town of Loire, my dear visitor. From now on, consider yourself our guest. Let your imagination run away with you on your tour of the splendid and legendary fortress. You are very fortunate. If you are patient and listen to what I tell you, you will get to know the great mysteries that are guarded inside its walls. Please take a look at the landscape surrounding the castle.
Go to number 2 and resume the video to start your visit.
Take a look around you. The castle stands at the southern edge of the Loire Mountains, in a place that made it practically impregnable to the Muslims who settled down there below, on the La Hoya Plain and in the nearby town of Bolea. To the north are the mountains of San Juan de la Peña, and a little further off, the Great Pyrenees. From the highest peak of this range, Puchilibro, the locals say that on a clear day, when the wind is blowing, you can see the towers of the Cathedral of El Pilar in Zaragoza. You may well raise your eyebrows, but believe me, it's true. First of all, you should know that you are looking at the most well-preserved Romanesque castle in Europe. It was begun in the early 11th century at the orders of Sancho the Great, King of Pamplona. Aragon was then a small county, and the plain opposite was Muslim territory, just like most of the rest of Spain at the time. As you can imagine, the Christians had to erect buildings like this to defend their lands and prepare their invasions of the enemy zone.
Continue with the video to learn the story of Sancho the Great.
Before we continue, let me tell you about Sancho Garcés III. He was the king who ordered this fortress to be built, and he was the most powerful Christian monarch on the Iberian Peninsula in the 11th century. Sancho Garcés III was king of Pamplona between the year 1000 and 1035, as well as king of Sobrarbe and Ribagorza, and administrator of Castile. Under his rule, the kingdom of Pamplona grew to cover more land than ever before. Historians consider him to be the first Europeanist monarch, as his relationships extended beyond the Pyrenees, and because he brought the latest political, religious, and intellectual trends to his kingdom. He married into the Castilian royal family, and his reign coincided with the crisis in the caliphate that followed the death of Almanzor. With this in mind, he intended to unify the Christian states. He in fact managed to conquer both Astorga and León, and because of the extent of his rule, he was given the name Emperor of All Spain, or Rex Hispaniarum, and coins were even minted that bore this title. He died in 1035, and was buried in the monastery of San Salvador de Oña in Burgos.
Go to point number 4 and resume the video to continue with the visit.
Loire Castle was built in several different stages. The first began in the early 11th century, and the architects designed a series of Lombard-style structures. Then, under King Sancho Ramírez, in 1071, the castle was enlarged and given the dual function of fortress and abbey. Later, in the reign of Pedro I, the Aragonese troops departed from Loire Castle and from the nearby towns of Marcuello, Añez, Ayerbe and Huesca to try to conquer the town of Bolea, which was still under Muslim rule. They achieved their goal in September 1101. If you look at the facade of the castle, you will notice the magnificent semicircular apse of the church of San Pedro, which sits perfectly on the craggy, uneven ground. As we move towards the inside of the fortress, you can see the Albarana Tower on your left. The tower stands separate from the main building, and it was designed as a watchtower for the castle entrance, as well as a bell tower for the old village church. Finally, the castle grounds were enclosed by the fortified walls in the 13th century, 200 years after the original fortress was built. It was its strongest element of defence, along with the rocks that surround the castle. The walls encompass an area of 1 hectare and were built to protect the village of Loire from potential attacks and sieges. By then, the Crown of Aragon had extended its rule to include Valencia, Majorca, and other places in the Mediterranean area, and the Muslims were no longer a threat to the village. The enormous fortified wall is reinforced by 1 rectangular turret and 9 semicircular ones. It is around 1.5 meters thick, which meant a walkway could be built around it on the inside.
Stand in front of the main door and go to point number 5. Resume the video to continue with the visit.
Look at the doorway of the castle. It's magnificent, with ornamental patterns on the tympanum and on the capitals. Have you seen the monkeys? Listen to them. They are acting out the rules you should try to obey once inside the castle. See, hear, and don't speak. Pay attention to what they are telling you, or the soldier on the capital on the left-hand side will bring his sword down and fulfill his nasty threat. On the right-hand door jamb, you can read a late 11th century funeral epitaph. In the name of God, here lies the servant of God, Tulgas, who died on the 30th of November in the year 1134. Whosoever reads these words, pray one Our Father, one Ave Maria, and a Requiem, so that he may rest in peace.
Go to point number 6 and resume the video to continue with the visit.
As you can see, the main entrance to the castle is a staircase that has a central section and side steps, covered by a barrel-vaulted ceiling. The central section, which is wider and with more shallow steps, was used by noblemen and monarchs, flanked by their guards who walked up the side steps. Another theory is that the central stairs were used to channel off rainwater, or that the steps on the sides were used for one-to-one armed combat. Soldiers from the castle could take up a slightly higher position to fight off the enemy coming up the middle section of the stairs. Let's carry on upwards. Halfway up the stairs on the left-hand side, we come across what is assumed to be the gatehouse. It measures barely 10 square meters, and it housed the soldiers who guard the main entrance and the crypt opposite it. Before you enter the crypt, look at the little door that leads into it. It was built very simply, underneath a semicircular arch with a carved stone Christogram, which is the symbol representing Christ's initials in Greek, and which signifies the beginning and end of all things.
Enter the room and go to number 7. Resume the video to continue with the visit.
The crypt was designed to be a place of worship and burial. For centuries it also guarded treasures and relics that are now kept in the village church. For example, there were the relics of St. Demetrius, a Roman proconsul who was martyred in Thessalonica in 303 AD, in the reign of Emperor Maximilian, and whose feast day is the 8th of October. After crossing the first threshold of the crypt, you will see 2 staircases leading from the left and the right directly up into the royal chapel. Almost as soon as you have passed these, you will see a second doorway on your right, and on the third stone, you will see a carving of a dog with a collar around its neck, looking submissive. This docile creature was cured of rabies by Saint Quiteria, to whom this crypt is dedicated. She is said to protect people from rabies, as well as from the plague and madness. The crypt is semicircular in layout, with walls 2 meters thick. The acoustics in the room are perfect. Try them out for yourself. Now return to the main staircase and go on up to the top.
Go to the church to point number 8. Resume the video to continue your visit.
My dear friend, we are now in the Royal Chapel, the most well-preserved part of the fortress and its most highly prized feature in artistic and architectural terms. It is one of the finest Romanesque buildings in Aragon, and it's devoted to Saint Peter, the patron saint of the monastery that was housed inside the castle. Its main feature is its impressive dome. It rises above 4 windows, supported by double arches. Now look at the checkerboard appearance of the walls and how the light filters in through the alabaster glazed windows. Isn't it lovely? The apse of the church is typical of its period, with columns and ornate capitals joined together by semicircular arches. The church contains a total of 84 carved capitals. They are all different and original, and cover a wide range of different themes: plants, mythological creatures, and scenes from the Bible. If you take a look at the far end of the church, you will see part of the rock that originally served as the outer wall of the old military fortress. Let's go back through the main door and continue our visit. Carry on up the stairs and stop at the first gallery intersection.
Go to point number 9 and resume the video to continue with the visit.
Well, well. We have seen almost half of the fortress already. I hope you're enjoying your visit. Now from here, as we pass a series of load-bearing arches built to support the weight of the vaulted ceiling, you can see the entrance to the old fortress. If you look carefully, you can see it at the end, to the right of the longer passageway. Opposite this, we shall continue on our way towards the monastery quarters.
Enter the monastery quarters up to number 10. Resume the video to continue your visit.
These rooms are where the canons spent their everyday life. As you can see, they were long rooms built underneath stone arches and with up to 3 levels of horizontal timber flooring. On the second floor, among the monk's cells, there was a small chamber, probably used by the prior, which was different from the rest because it had a stone vaulted ceiling, supported by the walls that you can still see today. On the upper level, there are a number of long, narrow arrow loops for defence. This part of the castle was used as a monastery and was built for that purpose by Sancho Ramirez. At the end of the 11th century, however, after the conquest of Huesca by the Muslims, the monks moved to the castle of Monte Aragon, next to the town of the same name, and this fortress was no longer used as a monastery. Several noble families took advantage of this lack of authority to dispute its ownership. The castle was finally abandoned in the 16th century. People's lifestyles and tastes had changed. Times were different, and the old ghosts of the past remained here, behind its walls.
Go to point number 11 and resume the video to continue with the visit.
Have you seen this little room? What does it look like to you? It was used as a storeroom, larder, and wine cellar, although it is also thought to have been used as a jail. The archaeologists working on the room did in fact find some human bones and chains, rather like the ones you see hanging over there. Right, let's continue our tour. Go on up the narrow staircase on the left.
Go to point number 12 and resume the video to continue with the visit.
According to those who have studied the castle, this room was the armory. As you will have seen as we came up here, on either side of the stairs there were a number of rooms. These were used for a number of different purposes, although there is no documentary evidence to sustain the theories. However, certain written records do indicate that this was the armory, the place where the instruments of war were possibly stored, during the period when the castle was a noble residence. Now please go along the passageway at the end, on your right.
Go to point number 13. I resume the video to continue with the visit.
We are now standing in the passageway that connected all the monastery chambers directly to the royal chapel. Look out of the windows and enjoy the wonderful views. A few centuries ago, the village of Loire stood right there below us until it was abandoned and moved to the foot of the mountains. If you walk along the passageway, you will see a door at the top of the staircase, which leads onto the terraces above the chapel, which served as a walkway for guards. Go down the stairs you can see on your right, passing on your left a wall with symbols carved onto it by the masons who worked on the fortress. There are 40 different masons' marks throughout the castle. This is actually the north wall of the royal chapel. The wooden door you can see leads directly into the chapel. At this point, you have now seen most of the castle, in other words, mainly the additions built under Sancho Ramirez in the late 11th century. As I explained before, this area was used as a monastery, although it was later used for different purposes and inhabited by other sorts of people.
Continue with the video to learn the story of Sancho Ramirez.
Sancho Ramirez of Aragon and Pamplona was the grandson of King Sancho III. In 1078, he took over the lands of this kingdom and built the fortress of Castellar. His conquest of the plains gradually enabled him to build castles that served as both the backbone and protection of the lands he had conquered. Sancho Ramirez completed the siege of Huesca, where he died of an arrow wound. His body was taken to the monastery of Monte Aragon, and later moved to that of San Juan de la Peña. During his reign, the Roman rite was introduced into the various monasteries under his jurisdiction, including Loare. Continue towards the door at the end.
Go to point number 15 and resume the video to continue with the visit.
From here you can see the entrance to the old 11th century military fortress, which is easily distinguished from the rest of the building because it was built of limestone from the rock on which the castle stands. It would have housed between 20 to 30 soldiers, which was just a small garrison in charge of watching over what was then a frontier zone. At the bottom of the Torre de la Reina, or Queen's Tower, which you can see beside you with its three mullioned windows, we come to the ramp and steps leading up to the old fortress. Just imagine. Before the monastery was built, the only way to the old fortress was a narrow and fairly inaccessible path cut out of the rock. It was just wide enough for a horse, and both horse and rider would have a hard time making their way up into the bailey or forecourt where we are going now.
When you arrive to the forecourt, resume the video to continue your visit.
What a racket! Soldiers sharpening their weapons and burnishing the steel armor, swords clashing, all hoping to come through the battle unharmed, working on their fighting skills every day so as to avoid the enemy's two-handed sword. From here we can really see the size of the military part of the castle. Let me describe it to you briefly. First of all, there are two long windows in the wall on the left. These belong to the outer wall of the old fortress, which later became the end of the royal chapel when the monastery was built. On that side, you can also see the octagonal cupola peeking over the roofs. If you look ahead of you, you can see the old church, which was dedicated to St. Mary. It was a small chapel for the castle before it was attached to the monastery. A little further to the right, there's a badly damaged block in which the storerooms were housed on the bottom floor. Above it we can see the majestic chapter house, which has the most ornate window in the whole castle on its southern side. There's also a water cistern inside the bailey, which looks like a well, but which is thought to have been able to contain up to 80,000 litres of rainwater which ran off the roofs. Now look at the north side of the bailey, where the highest towers are. As I've already said, if you look at the north side of the fortress, to your left, where there's now a pleasant terrace, there's a building that once had three floors. You can see the remains of the roof have been preserved, on the second floor, as well as the openings of the doors that led to it. This military building was probably sleeping quarters for the soldiers. Attached to these rooms is one of the three towers that comprise the old castle. Take a look and you'll be able to make out its various stories and layout. Continuing on to the right, we again come to a two-story building. You can still see the beginning of a vertical wall at the bottom, as well as a parallel wall and the base of the arches that supported the terraces on the second floor. Archaeologists have assumed, quite rightly, that this was the soldiers' kitchen, because the largest fireplace in the castle is to be seen on the lower floor. Above it are the remains of another fireplace that would have been used for heating purposes. The smoke from the downstairs fireplace would have risen to the upper floor, as you can see from the blackened wall of the little room above, which would have been used as a smokehouse for preserving food.
Now go to the Queen's Tower, to point number 18, and resume the video to continue your visit.
Experts can find no evidence of the castle ever being used as a royal residence. The tower has a lovely set of mullioned windows on the southern side of the third floor, which shows it must have been a distinguished building, certainly. We must therefore assume that the tower had other purposes besides merely protecting the entrance to the old fortress, which is just below it. Now go over to the keep, which is the highest tower in the castle.
Resume the video there to continue with the visit.
As we have already said, the keep is the tallest tower in the castle and the hardest to get into. It is also one of the most well-preserved 11th century military towers, and it belongs to the original castle built under Sancho III. It was originally a separate tower standing outside the fortress, but when the monastery was built around it in the late 11th century, it ended up inside the new enclosure. The only way to get from the tower and the rest of the castle was across the entrance bridge, which is today made of stone, but which used to be made of wood. You can still see the beams that supported it on the corners of the doorway to the tower. The builders designed a walkway that enabled the tower to be isolated in the event of fighting on the outside to protect the lord of the castle and his immediate entourage. Some years ago, in the early 1980s, excavations at the bottom of the tower revealed a tunnel that led to the outer northern side of the castle. The tunnel had been dug in case the castle ever came under siege, and its inhabitants were forced to escape from the enemy. The archaeologists were only able to recover the first 8 metres of the tunnel, and we don't know how long it was altogether. It is one of the castle's best-kept secrets. In those days, Aragon ended here. Further south was Al-Andalus, and in just one day's walk over the mountains, you could reach Jaca. Jaca was the ancient capital of the kingdom, home of the royal palace, and very close to the monastery of San Juan de la Peña, where the earliest monarchs of Aragon lie buried.
Go to point number 20 and resume the video to continue your visit.
Loarre's importance as a fortress began to diminish when King Sancho Ramirez decided to settle in the plains. In 1086, he began to build the castle of Monte Aragon, which was a place of enormous strategic importance, as the Muslims controlled the Hoya de Huesca region at the time. Some historians say the decline of Loire took place in the 16th century, when the inhabitants of the castle moved to the foot of the mountains and founded the present town of Loire. A large collection of sculptures and paintings once belonged to the castle, some of which are still kept in the church in Loire. We've come to the end of our tour of one of the most interesting Romanesque monuments in Europe, one that was a castle, fortress, and royal palace at the same time. Loire was the frontier between Christians and Muslims. I hope you've enjoyed your visit. Before you return your audio guide, please let me bid you farewell with a harcha, or typical verse dating from the time when the fortress was built. Friend, do not leave me. What will I do if you go away? What will I do? What will become of Mibi, Habibi? Goodbye.
This is a FlexiGear audio guide production.